The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to the weekend. Welcome to this sunny Friday afternoon. But I know what you're thinking. Dor, it's always sunny in your heart. So true. Okay, we got a lot to get to. Parents, taxpayers, should you be getting a property tax rebate since you are paying for Cadillac schools, $20,000 per student per year, but you're getting a Pinto education? It's time to get a rebate to the taxpayers. The schools are spending a fraction of what they ordinarily would if the schools were open. They don't have the transportation costs. They don't have the school security costs. They don't have school resource officers. I mean, a fraction of what they were spending. We, the taxpayers, should get some money back. And parents, in particular, you need help, because the schools are not providing a decent online education for kids. So we'll talk to Lee Finna with the Washington Policy Center about that coming up at 1:30 this afternoon. Also, the effort to now defund the King County Sheriffs. Seattle's virus becomes the region's pandemic. And a bunch of radical politicians on the King County Council now want to defund the King County Sheriff's Department. You know that that will lead to even more law enforcement disaster around here. So we have you covered on all of these stories, but let's get right to the big lead.
The big lead, top story.
As I've been telling you, the mob that's been marching in the streets, you just heard in our news at the top of the hour, they are up on Capitol Hill harassing the cops that are trying to clear a homeless encampment today. These homeless encampments are, you know, just hell on earth. The conditions in these camps, it's like Calcutta. And what they used to do when they had a navigation team before the Seattle City Council cut the nav team was they'd go and they'd offer services to all the people living on the streets, a place where they have a roof over their head, where they can get a meal, and where they can get some addiction or mental health treatment. Now they're going to ban all of that because our Marxist City Council wants as many mentally ill drug addicts on the streets as possible. And so, and the mob does as well, which is why they're fighting the police this hour up on Capitol Hill. But where does the mob go from here? You know, they've gotten the police defunded. What is next? Well, we got a little glimpse of it up on First Hill and in the Central District, where a bunch of people, you know, they've gentrified the neighborhood a little bit in the CD. And there were some people sitting on a deck outside enjoying a warm summer night a couple of evenings ago when some Black Lives Matter protesters came by and they just started screaming at these young people who were in their home, sitting on the deck, having some dinner, maybe a glass of wine, enjoying a summer night. And here's what went down in the CD in downtown Seattle.
What's your name? Tucker or Doug? Whichever one it is. Give up your house. Get Black people back their home. You're sitting there comfortably. Comfortable as if you didn't help gentrify this neighborhood.
I used to live in this neighborhood.
But I used to live in this neighborhood. I grew up here.
Okay, so they're very upset because the people who live in that apartment or condo, whatever it is, but it looks like kind of a newer building there in the city, they're very upset because they are living comfortably and they were sitting outside enjoying the evening. And then this group started berating them, saying, we, meaning, I guess, the predominantly black protesters. We used to live in this neighborhood, the Central District. It went on for a long, long time.
You work for Amazon, don't you? You work for Amazon, don't you? Because the majority of people that live in the Central District now work for Amazon because it's an easier commute to downtown for. Well, guess what? The guy you work for is part of the problem, too. So, let's not...
Okay, now I should note, they have no idea who these people work for. They have no idea if they work for Amazon or somebody else. All they know is that they're sitting outside on a deck on a summer night.
Act like you just are oblivious to me because you knew about it all along and you were okay with it. But guess what? We're not. And we're bringing it to your front door. So what the are you planning to do about it?
I had the windows calling the cops.
I don't care.
Okay, that doesn't really make sense. How do you plan to re-gentrify a black neighborhood that you've gentrified because you live here now? And then the harassment continued as they kept screaming at these, and they look like they're maybe 20-somethings who live in this building.
Bop into us marching. Look at all those people fighting for justice. Funny as
up there having a good old time just a second ago when the drums and everything else was going, but now that the heat's on you, you can't take it. Well, guess what? Get the
out the
kitchen and move out.
Yes. 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 Fire, gentrifier.
Okay, I don't know what that chant means. Fire, fire, gentrifier. I don't know if that's a threat against people who have gentrified neighborhoods or what. And then finally, a protest, and this audio comes to us. It was posted by Concrete Reporting. And then the protesters said they want the white people who live in this apartment or condo building, they want them to give their homes to the protesters.
Oh, 50 million miles and give you guys an inch. No, we're not taking that no more. Right. We want it all. We want everything that we supposed to have, period. And then some, too. Because right. Everything we supposed to have ain't enough.
Hello.
It damn sure ain't enough. Hello. Not for all the years that we didn't have to suffer. It damn sure ain't enough. Yeah. You feel what I'm saying? So, like, they're serious, man. Like,
okay. So... what's next is the question. We've talked about that an awful lot. Well, they want to just make life miserable for people in their homes because the people have something that they think should be given to them. But that's not going to be the next coordinated target. When you give in to bullies, which is what has happened in the last few months. Jenny Durkin is paying a healthy ransom of close to $100 million to the people who took over Capitol Hill and the East Precinct. Close to $100 million she's giving to them, to these community organizations as ransom so that she could get that part of her city back. Now, once you cave in, once you show the level of weakness that our politicians have shown, it just emboldens the bullies. So what's going to be next? And I've been hitting around at this for a while, but I've been talking to an awful lot of people on the streets and in law enforcement, and there is little doubt that the next target of the mob, once the schools reopen, it will be your kid's school. Or if you are a kid, it will be your school. If you're a taxpayer, it's going to be the schools that you spend so much every year in property taxes on. Which brings me to the next part of our Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
And I'm going to start with a clip from Cabot Phillips. Cabot Phillips is with a group called Campus Reform. And they watchdog the takeover of the schools by the radical left. And he was talking earlier today about the cancel culture and how it is already starting to target our schools.
Well, the ultimate goal is power and controlling completely the narrative that's being taught on campus. And cancel culture is simply a means of achieving that power. They know that if they can compel anyone into silence by threatening them and by name calling, that they can get what they want because there won't actually be substantive debates taking place.
And this is what has happened with the cops. If you scream loud enough and long enough, ACAB, and bleep the police, all of a sudden that starts to take root. And now if you oppose that, if you support the cops, you are denounced as somehow a racist. If you support police officers, and that's how they attempt to silence people. And so in the schools, they have this New York Times did something called the 1619 Project, which has been widely denounced by Pulitzer Prize winning historians as largely fiction. But he talked about how they are going to go from traditional American history to this radical agenda for history in our schools.
The New York Times 1619 Project, this idea that America was actually founded to preserve white supremacy and slavery, that's being implemented in K-12 classrooms around the country, and no one is standing up to it. This is a revisionist history that Pulitzer-winning historians, who are actually experts, have called a work of fiction. But anyone that doubts that, they're instantly called a racist, and so this project is being implemented without a fight. We're allowing the New York Times to educate many of our young people in this country, and that fight is not happening because, in large part, of cancel culture, and that's what's happening to our education system, and that's why this is so pervasive and so dangerous.
And parents are going to be afraid to speak up, because if they do, if they say, hey, can we teach some traditional American history about our founding fathers and the framers of our Constitution, those parents will then be denounced as racists themselves. And so that will be an attempt to shut up all parents.
The New York Times' own fact checker has come out publicly and said, I raised serious questions about some of the inaccuracies here, and I was ignored. And look at the response that all those historians that questioned the 1619 Project got. They weren't any sort of substantive response. The author of the 1619 Project, Nicole Hannah Jones, said, well, those are just angry old white men. And that's what we see at Leadership Institute's Campus Forum. We've been reporting in the education system how the second you offer any critique, you must be a racist. See what happens? If you disagree with us, you must be a terrible bigot and a racist. And that's what stifles conversation. That's what keeps experts in the field from speaking up, because they don't want to have their careers ruined. And a lot of parents feel the same way. They don't want to go in and ask about the curriculum in their students' classroom because they don't want to look like they're against the social justice narrative of the left. And that's why we do need to care about what's going on here.
So that's Cabot Phillips with Campus Reform on Fox and Friends. So let me read to you an email I got from a cop, because he is spot on where the next battleground is going to be. Dory, I worked as a police officer for 27 years. I planned to work 30, but left last September because I could no longer live with the revolving door criminal justice system and also the changes my fellow officers and I saw coming. The reason I'm writing, first, I believe there are two likely outcomes in November. Trump wins and the Democrats in the streets get 10 times more violent. Biden wins and there are many more votes counted than voters. Trump challenges the results and the left get 10 times more violent that way as well. Secondly, Black Lives Matter has secured millions in funding and under their control due to the violent uprising. Most of the money came from plundering the budgets of police departments. This was very profitable, and now businesses are donating money so they can hang a sign in their window to avoid destruction, which is extortion. I believe that BLM will now use the same tactics against other government agencies for profit. Minority parents often complain that minority students are punished more often and more harshly. In addition, there are problems with meeting the needs of minority students. The schools are on the record admitting all of the above. The same equality argument used against the police could be used against the school district to access their budget stream. Follow the money. BLM took on the police, who are armed and have limited buildings that are hardened against attack. The schools have dozens of public buildings, open to the public, encased in glass. BLM tactics would quickly overwhelm a school district. Imagine BLM protesters arriving unannounced at Ingram High School at noon on a Friday. The angry mob gathers out front or even enters the school. The students are BLM supporters and half join the protest. Kids begin breaking things and painting the building. The teachers who do not join are harassed or assaulted and called racist. Cars in the teachers' lot are vandalized. Staff hide behind locked doors. 911 is called. Dispatch now advises the sergeant on duty that calls are coming in from the other high schools in the district. Chief South, West Seattle. And these type of tactics go on for months. School staffs are weary and demoralized from months of being called vile names. They're told there are no good teachers and they should all kill themselves like they did with cops. Mobs show up at the homes of school administrators and board members. Most medium-sized cities have over a dozen schools. There's no way to protect the staff and buildings. The feds offer help, but the governor refuses help to quell the peaceful protests. Eventually, the city gives in and moves a large part of the school budget to fund BLM projects, just as they've done with the police budgets. The tactics used against the police will crush a school district. I firmly believe BLM will use the same tactics against other government institutions. They took on the police, and with help from the Democrat-controlled cities, they won. The schools are completely vulnerable and will fold quickly. That's from a 27-year veteran cop. And I believe the exact same thing to be true, that after being emboldened, after successfully hijacking police budgets, the schools will be next, because kids already have been brainwashed by an increasingly leftist group of teachers, for the most part, not all of them. And anybody who doesn't join in will be denounced as a racist, and the mob tactics will overwhelm the schools, and they will successfully hijack, extort school budgets as they have the police budgets. I hope I'm wrong, but that's what a cop thinks. That's what I think. And the mob has just become emboldened by the weakness of our leaders. And that is your big lead for today.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
Meanwhile, government really wants to take over control of your kids. One of the scariest examples of that is a story we told you about last fall. It's back in the news. And it's a story every parent needs to hear, especially if you're having marital problems. And it's coming up next, right after we check the news, here on the Dory Monson Show. Oh, man, I'm reading the text messages, talking about how I believe the mob is going to go after the schools next. And people are from the 253. Stop trying to scare people with bogus predictions of what you think the future will be. You are awful. You know, I got the exact same text messages 2 years ago when I told everybody that they were going to take over the police department and try to reduce the police department to rubble. When I got the socialist website documents. And I told you that they were coming after the cops and they were going to try to destroy the police. And I got the exact same text back then. Why are you making stuff up? I'll put my track record up against anybody's. when it comes to predicting what's happening in this region, whether it be the cop takeover, the tolling of every roads, the disaster that Sound Transit's turned out to be. I'll put my track record of predictions against anybody in the media. So you just wait and see the next couple of years what happens to our schools. Okay, speaking of our schools, there has been such an effort to take away control of your kids. And there is a story that was so powerful last year. It was the story of a little then 7-year-old kid named James Younger. James is a little boy. His mom wants him to be a girl at age 7. The mom says, well, he played with the girl's Happy Meal toy when he was 3 years old. But there's a lot more to the story than just that. But here is 7-year-old James saying that his mom is the one who's confusing his gender.
Oh, you're a boy, right?
No, I'm a girl.
Who told you you're a girl?
Mommy.
When did she tell you you were a girl?
I love girls.
Oh, I see. So mommy told you you're a girl?
Uh-huh.
Does mommy do anything else, like with a girl with you?
Mm-hmm.
Like what?
Like dresses.
What does she do?
She do puts them on me.
She puts dresses on you? Oh, wow. And what else does she do?
She buys my headbands.
Uh-huh.
And she gets me hair clips.
Okay, hair clips, girls' toys. So the person interviewing the 7-year-old there is his dad. And the dad's name is Jeffrey Younger. Now, here's the backstory on all of this. The mom isn't even the biological mom. They got an egg donor, and they got a surrogate to carry the baby. And I believe Jeffrey is the biological dad. But then the mom and dad started going through an ugly divorce. And what the dad and at least one judge and the attorney general of Texas, what they all believe was happening was that the mom, because this was such a bitter divorce, she was trying to think of the most excessive way that she could hurt her husband because it was so bitter. And according to some testimony, turning their son into a little girl was the mom's way of getting back at the dad. And so the mom got a court order to chemically castrate, a permanent chemical castration of this little boy at age 7. That's when the dad last year got a court injunction to stop the castration of his little boy. And the guy who's covering the story, a reporter named Luke Macias, he talked with the dad about
this. My name is Jeff Younger. I'm the father of two boys, James and Jude. My ex-wife claims that James is a transgendered girl, and she has to date actually socially transitioned him, meaning that he wears a dress at her home. He has a new made-up name, Luna, appears in the court filings. He goes to school. The teachers call him Luna. He uses the girls' bathroom at school. All of his authority figures, his mother, his teacher, the librarian at school, the police officer at school, the principals at school, say he's a girl. I'm the only authority figure in his life that tells him the truth, that he's actually a boy.
And if this is the mother's way of getting revenge in a bitter divorce, what a particularly evil way to do
his that. Mother has enrolled him at the Genesis Clinic, G-E-N-E-C-I-S, clinic at Children's Hospital, and he has been diagnosed with gender dysphoria, and they have him on the Dutch protocol. The first step is social transitioning. The second step is hormone transitioning, where they will apply hormones to him that will prevent the natural growth of his sexual organs, effectively chemical castration of this boy. The third step is surgical transition, which they do as early as 15 years old in the state of Texas.
Tell you what, any adult, any doctor, any parent, if the kid at age 18 says, I'm not the gender that I present as, then fine, they're an adult. They can change their gender. But to do that at age 7, to chemically castrate, to permanently destroy the sex organs of a perfectly healthy 7-year-old boy, if it might be because of a bitter divorce. And the dad talked about the punishment the mom would use.
And then Miss Georgilis, my ex-wife's name is Ann Georgilis. Miss Georgilis was putting my son into timeouts, and she would lock him in his room and say that the monsters only eat boys.
So he's only safe if he becomes a girl.
His mother was telling him that he was a girl. She was dressing him as a girl. She was putting nail polish on him and encouraging him to act like a girl. And my personal assessment, this isn't from James, but my personal assessment was that she was only giving him love and affection if he acted like a girl.
Okay, there is a heartbreaking update to this story. A judge late yesterday, ordered that father must pay $5,000 a month to his ex-wife so she can begin physically transitioning now 8-year-old James into a girl named Luna. And all of this, as I said, was after last fall, the Texas governor, Greg Abbott, the attorney general, Child Protective Services, they all looked into this and came to the conclusion it was a horrific case and that the mother was just abusive, trying to castrate her son to punish her ex-husband. But now a judge, an activist judge, has said, no, you have to give your ex-wife $5,000 a month so that she can go forward with medically doing this to your son. Let me take a quick time out. You got to hear. I've got a little more audio to share with you. This is so important because for parents, we're all losing control of our kids. We're losing control to teachers who want to brainwash them. That's an actual story in the news today. I'll have that for you in the fastest 15. We're losing control of our kids to teachers who literally want to brainwash them, to spouses who want to punish each other, to activist educators who funnel them to activist doctors who mutilate kids at age 7 and 8. This is unbelievable. More details straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Give you a little more background on the story. It's so disturbing what we do to our children these days. So a little more of the background of this then 7-year-old kid last year. In October, there was a jury that gave sole conservatorship of the 7-year-old boy, James, to his mother. And then that's when the dad discovered that mom wanted to turn their son into a girl at age 7, named Luna. And so dad went to not only to court, but as I said, the attorney general and the governor of Texas supported the dad. And then they gave mom and dad 50-50 joint conservatorship. So they would have to agree on any medical treatments. A new judge came aboard in January. And she said, yeah, the dad should have equal say in medical decisions. But it was just this week that same judge rolled back her own decision and said, no, we're going to let the mom do it now, and you're going to have to give the mom $5,000 a month. And the dad says that, there's a Save James Facebook page. There's a hearing coming up in September as he tries to stop the chemical castration of his son.
Around James's, getting close to his 5th birthday party, I start noticing that he's coming out of the house when I go to pick him up, coming out of Ms. Georgilis' house crying. And it took me a couple of times picking him up to sort of understand why. It was because his fingernails were painted, or he was wearing girl shoes, or other things. So I asked her to stop sending him out in girls' clothing or dressed like a girl. He doesn't like it. When his fifth birthday party arrived, she made that basically his coming out party. He showed up in a dress, and a number of people at my church attended and talked to our priest about it, were very upset about it. And from that point forward, he dressed full-time as a girl, and she enrolled him in school the next summer, when summer ended, enrolled him in school as a girl named Luna.
But here's what I want you to consider. Can you imagine, whether you're a mom or a dad, can you imagine if this was your kid and an ex-spouse got a court to go along with permanently, chemically mutilating your kid? And that's where, you know, I've never been in a bitter relationship situation like that, so I don't really know what it's like. But as I heard this dad talk, and I think we can all relate, moms and dads, just as parents, he just feels like he is watching his kid helplessly be assaulted by his ex-wife and by the courts.
Every single day, you have to see your son sexually abused, and you have to maintain your calm. You have to be the one who's calm, because the courts are not going to be fair to you. And the only way you can survive this and get your son through this alive is to calmly allow your son to be tortured right before your eyes and outlast the opposition. That's what it's like. I'll tell you spiritually what it's like.
And I'm looking at the text messages. Dory, why are you sharing this audio again? Because this generated so much interest last fall and because of this week's judge ruling.
Imagine your child being ripped from you like this. What it feels like is your entire future has been taken from you. Not just your son, but all his sons and all their sons have been taken from you. And put those two together and imagine yourself there. You have some sense of what it's like.
Bless that kid. Fast 15's coming up next.